It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We've got a big panel. We're going to talk about the latest news from Apple, rumors about an Apple TV, where's the Mac Mini, and a whole lot more. You stay tuned. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 390, recorded February 18th, 2014. Rip, mix, and burn. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. To download the free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/MacBreak. And by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak2. And by FreshBooks, the simple cloud accounting solution that helps thousands of entrepreneurs and small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free for 60 days at GetFreshBooks.com and join over 5 million users running their business with ease. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers Apple and all the Apple stories out there, all five of them. And right now we have more people on the panel than there are Apple news stories this week. So that's going to make it really exciting. I'm going to start all the way on my left, Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times in chilly New England. Hello, Andy.
Thank you, Leo. Snow continues to harass citizens in the Northeast and all the way down the Eastern Corridor. As supplies of road salt continue to deplete, roads become treacherous. We go to Alex Lindsay with a live report.
Let me ask you, do you and your ilk, people in your area, when they watch CNN and it says millions threatened by killer storm, does that send terror?
Doesn't have the same impact it might have had about a couple months ago.
Yeah, because they say it every week now.
It's at this point, any part of the roof that would have collapsed has collapsed. Any children that would have gotten lost in the snow and died have already died, really. Yeah. At this point, it's like, make sure this marshmallow is on hand, make s'mores, and just sit it out.
I saw somebody build a Jabba the Hutt snowman on their front lawn. That's how much, if you have enough snow to build a Jabba the Hutt snowman, you've got a lot of snow. Anyway, welcome. It's good to have you from the frozen east, from the frozen Isle of Great Britain. We have Mr. Don McAllister, Screencasts Online. Hi, Don.
Hi there, Leo. We're not so much frozen as flooded at the moment.
Oh, no.
We've got copious amounts of water, especially down south. Yeah, the worst flooding for years. It's pretty bad down there.
Is that because of a lot of rain or what?
We've had a lot of rain. Politics have got involved as well about not dredging the rivers properly. It's just a complete mess down there. Lots of flooding. Lots of people flooded out of their homes and businesses ruined. And it's horrible.
If I remember from Herman's Hermits, the river is the Mersey River.
The one in Liverpool is the Mersey River.
Yeah.
The Mersey.
Mersey.
Yeah, down south. It's around Somerset, you know, around the southern region.
Are
really suffering. Up here in the north, we're not too bad. We've managed to escape most of it.
Awesome. Well, it's great to have you. Welcome.
Good to be back.
Nice to see you. Now, moving on, we're going to Washington, D.C., where our correspondent is sitting on the roof overlooking the White House, Alex Lindsay from the Pixel Corps. Hi, Alex.
Yes, Leo, we're going to figure out exactly the Mac usage here at the White House.
Alex actually looks better there than he does when he's in studio sitting next to me.
I have dedicated lighting.
And you're being shot with a 4K camera.
It's not a 4K camera, but it is a very high end. This is one of the Sony F950s that that we picked up after Star Wars got finished. So it is.
This is the.
Alice, can I say it's absolutely sickening because I watch local news and our anchor people don't look as good in their studio as you do right now. That's sickening.
Yes, he's being shot with the Star Wars camera. Unbelievable.
Well, you know, it's laying around. I mean, we figured we might as well. I was in D.C. for other meetings, and it was like, well, we got an insert studio. Why not use it?
That's how far that camera has fallen, ladies and gentlemen. It's not being used on a podcast.
Hey, that's what I bought it for.
If George Lucas knew, that's what we bought it. Right.
That was the first podcast ever in 1080p was out of this camera.
Yeah. In fact, this is the original Mac Break camera.
Yes, the original.
Yeah.
And it was used very heavily for a solid 6 or 7 years. And
wow.
It's still working.
You ain't seen nothing till you see Sal Segoyan doing Apple script in 4K.
Every detail in his beret. Crystal clearance.
You know, we haven't done a 3D Mac rig.
3D Segoyan would be good. I think that sounds...
I'll call Sal.
Yeah. He would go for that. Sal would definitely. He's one of the most three-dimensional people I know.
Okay. That's a point. That's a challenge.
There's everything about Sal says there's stuff in front of me and behind me.
You know what we should do? What we should do is 3D in 4K.
Oh. On YouTube. Ooh.
2K Brian.
Yes. And finally, we're still introducing the panel, ladies and gentlemen, an hour into the show. Finally, Renee Ritchie, also from the frozen north, north of the 49th parallel, way north in Montreal, Canada, of iMore.com. Hi, Renee.
Hi, Leo. It's so cold up here, I won't even mention the temperature anymore.
We don't care.
I'm really sorry I left the back door open, though, and froze Andy. Oh. That was my bad.
Well, anyway, great to have all of you. News just coming out that Apple has released OS X update seed 10.9.2. Some hope that maybe Mavericks, some of the really nasty bugs in Mavericks will be fixed. In fact, Apple is telling developers on this release, focus on mail messages and VPN. Mail has been just really horrific in Mavericks. According to Mark Gurman, writing for 9 to 5 Mac, the increase in beta release frequency... Somebody make a Kenneth, what's the frequency joke here, indicates that a public launch is quite quickly approaching. We'll also bring FaceTime audio to the Mac, along with contact blocking, which I've needed for some time, and you know who you are. Any word, Renee, from your sources about build 13C62?
No, I mean, they're still seeding it to developers. The mail stuff is still mostly Gmail related. Yeah. I don't know if the VPN stuff is their workaround for all those Vertimex patents.
It's a patent fix, huh?
Well, they have to do everything through relay servers now because they keep losing those patent cases to Vertimex, some evil V-named company.
Shocking. I buried the lead. Our number one story, Apple promotes young Smith to run human resources. You know, people, I get email all the time. You don't talk enough about Apple's executive team. Denise Young Smith will lead human resources, coming with experience in the retail division as the iPhone maker. That's what Bloomberg is now calling Apple. The iPhone maker seeks to attract and retain top talent. Smith is replacing Joel Poldolny, who will focus full time on Apple University. Smith is the latest woman to join Apple's top ranks, adding to Katie Cotton, who's been VP of Communications for some time. Angela Arendt, who is, I don't think, yet joined the team. She's coming as the CEO of Burberry to lead retail operations. And now you know why I didn't lead with this story.
That's a very strong hire because I'm sort of familiar with some of the recruitment of this, and I'm told that when she does an employee training video on proper use of break room appliances, everybody understands that you're not supposed to use microwave popcorn in the microwave.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's these little it's so Apple. You don't really build the whole thing. You pay attention to every component of the larger machine you're making. So.
Actually, we jest, but, you know, the former head of HR was the former dean of the Yale School of Management. Steve Jobs brought him in 2008.
It's kind of HR the way Phil Schiller is marketing, though. I mean, the titles at Apple don't mean what they mean in any normal company in the world.
Yeah. I mean, the reason HR is important is that's who does recruitment. We're not talking about, you know, a break room management. We're talking about this is the person who does
the
recruitment.
I have to say that source did speak off on the condition of anonymity, so was not willing to put her full force. I'm sorry, Denise, say her, but
Denise does the best videos. It does seem like Tim Cook is beefing up his management team, that he's adding people who weren't there before. Bloomberg reports, of course, reminds us that CTO Kevin Lynch was just hired. Paul Deneuve was hired from Yves Saint Laurent. Pete Distad from Hulu. So the team is getting bigger. And that makes sense. Tim Cook is the kind of guy, seems to me the kind of guy who does not lead alone at the top, much like Steve did, but in fact leads by consensus. A big cabinet. Yeah. Former marketing executive Bob Borchers says, Steve was never big on performance metrics or succession plannings or those kinds of things.
Yeah, he led with the gut.
Yeah. Podolny, the former HR person, actually created Apple University, which is the manager training program. He's going to continue to lead that. But that's what the HR person did, stuff like that. This was manager training, that kind of thing. So I think a focus, part of this is the focus on Apple DNA and preserving it. One of the courses at Apple University was called What Makes Apple Apple? And so they're really trying to transfer the DNA. The other part of this job, which I think becomes more and more important, is training managers what not to do to avoid future lawsuits.
I mean, they have two interrelated problems, and you know, one is that they're getting so many people in now that they can't do the old mentoring relationship where you were the new guy on a team and right. The team taught you everything to do. Now there's a couple senior people and a whole bunch of new people, and that means you have to teach more like a university. And at the same time, retention is still probably their biggest problem because the turnover rate, you know, it's not huge, but it's consistent. And replacing a lot of those senior engineers is not easy. Even if some of them do go out and come back, startups are incredibly attractive in the Valley right now. And keeping those people around is getting harder and harder.
Also, as Apple continues to acquire more companies, and they're basically bringing more people on staff, or not just people who out of college who have had sort of basic careers. We're talking about people who are all stars from entire industries. So I'm guessing that I don't think that they'd hire anybody who would introduce any amount of friction. But I think that that's sort of indicates why you need a really real all star in your HR department as well.
Yeah. And I think the other point is that Tim Cook is more collegial, and he really, unlike Steve Jobs, wants a team around him that can support him. You know, I mentioned before I read the Brad Stone book about Amazon, the Everything Store, and they talk about the publisher's lawsuit. And, you know, of course, Amazon had the wholesale model, the more traditional model of book buying. They'd pay the wholesale price, usually half the cover price, and then set a price in the Amazon store. That upset publishers because often the price was lower than cost. Amazon could afford to do that, but that really put pressure on other channels. But one of the things they talk about in this book was when Steve Jobs came along setting up iBooks, going to the publisher, saying, we're going to do something you'd prefer, which is the agency model. You set the price. We take 30%, just as we do in music. Apparently, the government's lawsuit against Apple, which is finally kind of wrapping up, this is the one that put the government monitor in Apple to make sure to ensure compliance, because Apple did lose this lawsuit. All the publishers settled, but Apple fought and lost. This lawsuit from the DOJ came from kind of statements Jobs made in the Isaacson biography, things you know, basically that that exposed the company to lawsuit, you know, saying we'll show those, you know, we'll show Amazon, we'll put them out of business, kind of stuff, revealing that really the intent of the agency model was to in fact undermine Amazon, that the publishers loved that. And you can't say that kind of stuff in public because it's, well, I guess it's collusion. So I think maybe, this was how Steve ran things. You know, it was Steve's ship, and he said what he wanted to say. And he would say things like, we're going to annihilate Android. We're going to put, you know, and these things were perhaps not politic. In fact, perhaps even legally suspect.
Well, even the whole iBooks thing was.
Go ahead, Alex.
I was just going to say, I think that a lot of those lightning rod founders, that kind of personality is what got them there.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that that is oftentimes almost a requirement of creating enough energy to push something out. And oftentimes that's not the best way to manage the company over a long period of time, which I think that Tim Cook is set up for. But the question is whether you'll still get the exciting products and the excitement in the company that you had before. You have to either have that excitement or really manage it well so that people really feel like they want to be there.
Renee?
The iBooks thing is a perfect example, too, because Steve Jobs said, no iBooks, and then called his team together and said, I decided to do iBooks. You have a couple months until the iPad event. go. And then you, so it's not a planned thing, and it's incredibly reactive, and you get statements like that. And under Tim Cook, that is probably not going to happen. That would probably be a much better plan going up to the event. And to Alex's point, you don't get the same highs, but you don't get the same lows as well. Right. So you get what's a more normalized Apple.
That is the challenge for Tim Cook, though, is to keep that creative genius, that spark alive, while building a more, kind of traditional structure.
Well, and I think some of the question, though, is also whether you need that at that point as well. So, I mean, what I mean by that is that to get to where Apple is now, to get to that incredible growth, you definitely needed that spark. And we definitely want to continue to see things coming out of Apple that are exciting. But I think on the other part of that is also being able to take this almost $500 million company and continue to make sure that it stays there. You know, and I think that, over time, managing one of the interesting.
Sorry, Alex. One of the interesting things, though, is the HR, the new HR appointment that we started off the discussion with. The person that she's replacing is going to focus now on the Apple University. Yes. And the university is very much an unknown quantity within Apple. But I know it was said, Steve's passing, that perhaps his greatest achievement wasn't any one individual product, but the fact that he'd built Apple as an organism and a growing thing that has its own DNA. And the university really was a way they foresaw of sort of keeping that together and to grow it, really. So it's quite interesting now that he's, and it was always strange that he had the title of, head of HR, because I think he did set up the university, but he's gone to focus on that more now. So, perhaps it needs a bit more TLC or it's growing right. So big that they need to, focus on it more.
Should make it clear, that's not the same as iTunes University, which is what we go to get university courses and stuff. It's Apple University, which is much more like Hamburger U at McDonald's. It's where
Pixar University.
It's where executives and management get trained to preserve the Apple DNA. And I think it's really telling that Tim Cook is continuing this effort. This is very important.
It's one of the secret parts of Apple's success. They, as a company, I can't think of many companies of that size that spend so. It's focused so much of their effort on actually producing products and actually producing things that are forward-thinking to forward-facing to consumers without wasting so much time on internal crap. Right. That does nothing but prevent things from happening, cause people to leave before their work is done, and all kinds of other inefficiencies like that. So I'm sure I think that's one of the things that makes Apple so successful.
And all they have to do is just look up the coast a little bit to Redmond and see what a hash Microsoft's made of things to realize there's a better way to do this. Apple announced another dividend, big dividend, $2.6 billion to shareholders. Here's another thing that would never have happened under Steve Jobs. He resisted this for years. This is in addition to the buyback. However, Apple's cash position is still excellent. They still have plenty of money in the bank. And of course, one of the things that Cook and others have said is we want to keep that money in the bank so we're nimble. Perhaps that's where MarketWatch came up with this very actually it's the San Francisco Chronicle with this very interesting story that Apple might have met with Tesla to talk about acquiring the electric car maker. Credible?
No. They met with them, but it wasn't for an acquisition.
Okay. Yeah. The Chronicle said Apple is looking at the medical devices business, specifically technology that could predict heart attacks. Oh, that's a separate story. Thomason Holman, the audio engineer who invented THX, he's the TH in THX, is somehow he is going to look about how you could predict heart attacks by studying the sound blood makes as it flows through the arteries. That'd be something you can listen to on a watch. Our own Dr. Mom in the chat room says she's spoken to cardiologists about this crazy notion. She says it's a non-starter. So we got two non-starters. Yep.
I do think the more I hear about these really, really fine-grained rumors about Apple medical devices, the more I think that of a device like that as sort of like Google's self-driving car, where it's something that they can definitely work towards. It's something they could even build a working thing of, and it's something that the company can even think is a very important thing for them to pursue. But the leap between having a demonstrable product and having a product that they can actually sell, not only to consumers, but also that the government will let them sell, is just such a huge gap that I'll be prepared to be dazzled and amazed by the day that comes when that thing is actually available for sale.
So did you see that article, Renee? Richie, it was kind of leaked out on Sunday, yesterday at night, last night or two nights ago, I guess. That Apple's, but now see what's interesting is it's not just Apple, it's Apple's M&A guy, Adrian Perica.
I liked Seth Weintraub's take on 9to5 Mac because he follows the electric car industry quite a lot, and he was thinking there's significant overlap in their interests in numerous areas, especially battery technology. And you know, Tesla's building a big battery plant. There's a lot of things going on with battery supply and demand. And I mean, we're not looking anywhere near graphene batteries yet, but graphene batteries are definitely on everybody's radar.
Right.
And there's a lot of things Apple could do with Tesla that does not involve them owning stores that sell cars.
So the reason these two stories go together is they come together in this article in the Chronicle from Thomas Lee and David Baker. They say, they quote analysts who saying Apple's got to do something with their nearly $160 billion in cash. but that's, you know, again, this is investors who say give it to us or spend
it. I think that the dividends is a waste of money. I mean, I think the buyback makes sense. The, you know, a buyback, you know, is slowly taking ownership back of the company. And I think that that's a useful endeavor if you're going to do something that, that makes the investors happy. But I don't think that they're getting, I don't think they get more out of the dividends. And I think that it's just, to me, that's just burning cash. You know, I mean, $2.7 billion, you could take 1,000 bands and fund their album and put it on iTunes exclusively.
Right.
You know, you'd probably get a lot more you know, upward push from that than you know, basically throwing it into the fire. As far as I'm concerned, from a company's perspective, you know, dividends. If you're a company that's failing or that's really not going to have any more growth, that's one thing. But you're talking about a company that continues to make more profits every month, every quarter that it may be, than it made before.
Right.
This is not a PG&E. This isn't a utility that needs to give away dividends because there's no other reason to invest. And so I think that the buyback makes sense. I think the dividends is they might as well just throw it into a into a big fire.
It might be a way of giving money back to just silence people like Carl Icahn and hope that they can move on.
But he's asking for buybacks.
He wants cash. He wants money. He wants to sell his stock for a big bump.
I'm sure that, you know, obviously there's guys at Apple that are a lot smarter than I am.
He's dropped that, by the way.
So I'm sure there's a good reason. But yeah. I think that, yeah, he has dropped it because Apple did enough.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly there's enough people that came up against him to, you know, I don't think people want Apple to lose its
So this whole pipe dream, and I think I agree with you, Renee, that it's bogus, about buying Tesla started in October when a German investment banking analyst, Adnan Ahmad, created a media stir when he wrote an open letter to Tim Cook and Al Gore urging the company to acquire Tesla. It's
like, but that's the
we
problem
get crackpot emails all the time, but that doesn't mean it's a story. This is what he wrote. I know this is a radical and potentially transformative idea, but this would radically alter Apple's growth profile. In Elon Musk, you could strike up a partnership and obtain a new iconic partner. You know, Elon Musk is one of the few people who could be the next Steve Jobs. So, you know, that kind of makes sense.
But he wants to run Tesla. He doesn't want to go work.
Yeah, you know, Tesla's doing great, right? There's no reason Tesla should sell out.
Like Steve Jobs never sold to IBM.
And Tesla's not next, right? It's not, you know.
They don't have anything that Apple needs.
Well, except also, Elon Musk, maybe.
I don't think they need Elon Musk. Because when I first heard that idea, I was thinking, I just don't see Elon Musk fitting in at Apple. Because he really he feels like that's that kind of guy who just doesn't want to have another person above him in any capacity.
I agree.
That's not the mode of some guy who simply says we're gonna do a revolutionary electric car and we're gonna make this company successful. That's not the sort of person you need to get
a
there.
A partnership isn't out of the question. That big 17-inch screen in the console of the Tesla, shouldn't that have an Apple on it?
But the automotive industry is primed now, especially with iOS in the car, which hasn't yet come out. It's due to come out soon. But you know, they do strike me as being the sort of company that they would partnership with to create a high profile brand and you know, get it out first, perhaps to Tesla, or integrate it in some ways we can't think of yet into their particular brand of vehicles.
I think one of the biggest problems is this viral stupidity that's hitting the media that sort of feeds off the market, where they say Apple is a hit-driven company. They have to have a hit. If Apple does not have a new product, they're a complete failure. Doesn't matter how many billions of phones they sell, how much money they make. They can make more money than Exxon, but if they don't have another hit product every year, they're going to be an utter failure. And the day after their next hit product comes out, if they don't have another one, I'm going to call them a failure
I think that that's how they climbed the ladder to where they are, but they don't need to continue that trajectory.
Well, the market thinks they do.
I think that misunderstands who Apple are anyway. Yeah. Because I agree with Don in that I could see them targeting the Tesla as being an Apple type of product, and that it is gutsy. It is cool. It is aspirational. It is unaffordable by most people who are shopping for this type of product. And it could show off Apple technology incredibly well. But Apple, it's in terms of buying a car company, that's something that if the rumor were about Google doing that and we take Elon Musk out of the situation, I could at least put that on the somewhere on the spectrum of credibility, because Google is one of these companies that simply says electric car. Yeah. Okay, cool. Sounds like a great idea. Let's start doing those too. Apple really does have to, I keep saying it, they are writing one story with a beginning and a middle and an indeterminate end, with consistent characterization and consistent plot lines. And once you introduce a spaceship into Pride and Prejudice, they say, no, this is not a story in which aliens visit Pride and Prejudice, so we're not going to have a spaceship land. I think that having owning Tesla would be like having a spaceship land in Pride and Prejudice.
If you,
well, and I think that, I
if
think-
you, Alex, took... let's do a little set theory. If you took the set of people who own Macintoshes and the set of people who own Teslas, how big is the intersection of those two?
Size of Silicon Valley.
I don't think that. Well, I think the real issue is that you know, I still believe that Apple does their products. They seem revolutionary, but their products are designed for 90%. What will 90% of the population do with 90% of the time? Like, that is what Apple products solve, and I don't think Tesla fits into that right now.
Well,
you know, it's 10%. It's still a 10% still, market or less.
It's still early yet, yeah.
It's a 1% market.
Well, let's talk about this watch then. Boy, the idea of hiring Tomlinson Holman is fascinating. They hired him in 2011. Nobody's denying that. And according to his LinkedIn profile, they hired him to, quote, provide audio direction, end quote. Seems like the quality of audio on iTunes is probably not what the inventor of THX is working on. According to the leak, they're looking at ways to measure noise turbulence as it applies to blood flow in order to predict heart attacks. Dr. Mom says, after talking to some cardiologists about this idea, they agree you can do that if you can listen to the heart, but you can't do it from a wrist. Maybe Apple's doing more than a wristwatch. Maybe they're going to do a heart monitor that you've...
Well, they have to do something non-invasive, don't they? They've got to do something that you can wear on the outside of your body that will measure various metrics. You know, just how feasible it is, I've no idea. I'm no expert. But the thing that I always hark back to is Touch ID. You know, although we were talking about fingerprint sensors in the phone before they actually came out, I don't think anybody actually anticipated just how well it was integrated and how well it actually worked in real life. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they do come up with some really strange off-the-wall way of measuring metrics with some as-of-yet unknown technique.
Yeah.
Because they've done it before.
I don't know. I think that, not to blow our collective trumpet our own thoughts too highly, but I think that about a year ago we were all collectively pretty much on the mark in that we were thinking about, well, authentication is a very, very problematic part of the user experience, but Apple would not do that unless they had it working absolutely as perfectly as it could humanly do, and a step above anything else that anyone else would have done. And I think that also adds a certain amount of focus to how we think about them doing this sort of a health watch, where every week after week we get a new rumor about another pie in the sky thing about, oh, it'll diagnose diabetes and it'll tell you when to go in for cancer screening and it'll do all this sort of stuff and it won't be invasive at all. You can buy it without a prescription. It'll be legal to sell in every country. I think that it will be more like fingerprint authentication, where it does this one thing. Even it doesn't even do the other one thing that we thought it would do, which is to for electronic payment transactions. It does this one thing. It unlocks your phone. And in the meantime, it gets you hooked on the idea of unlocking your phone by touching this one thing. So that's why if they do a health watch, it really is going to be one or two things that work so well that instead of being the health watch that you put in a drawer after about 2 weeks, or you lose it after 5 weeks and don't even bother to go look for it very hard, I think they'll make the first one that does a couple of things, and it's so good that you actually start turning over sofa cushions to try to find it.
Or it lets you know.
Well, and
where
I think what you want is something that you're going to keep on all the time. I mean, I think that is the. I know that I've been.
Well, you got to charge it.
You know, well, yeah, you have to charge it, but I think that. The issue that I have is that, you know, with the Nike Fuel Band, which I had for quite some time, is that it was another, you know, I could almost do everything I wanted to do with it. I mean, I had time and I could figure stuff out, but I really wanted all the other little bits and pieces that I have with the watch that I have, you know? And so, if I can get all of those things, you know, in one place, I really don't want to put something on each wrist. I really want it to just be one experience. And I think that, you know, I think Apple definitely has the opportunity to do that. And I don't think they need to measure my blood pressure or my heartbeat or any of those things. I mean, you know, just the basic motion of if they replace a Nike Fuel Band or a Fitbit and then they add all the other things that they could do, I think that they're in a pretty good place.
You get a Fitbit. Yeah, I agree with you. Fitbit that it does some of the Pebble notification stuff. But more importantly to all of this is beautiful. It's got, if it's fashion, and Apple can make something fashionable at a, you know, they can charge a decent price for that. I would consider it. It'd have to look good, though. I think most people, by the way, pardon me for this interruption. David Hakobo Bowl is a photographer who's done a set on Flickr called Macternity. I think we should just sit back and enjoy these pictures of David and his Mac Pro. He's having my baby. What a wonderful way.
It must have been cold there in my shadow. To never feel sunlight on your face. Did you ever know that you're my hero?
You're
everything I like to be.
I wish, for those of you listening to the audio stream, you could see these lovely pictures.
A Mac Pro boudoir photo.
I thought my fondle cam was going too far, but apparently here's a man who loves his Mac Pro even more.
That'd be illegal in several states.
Yes. Can you marry a Mac Pro in California? I don't.
I got $20 that says that the moisture sensor inside that is very, very much red.
Taking off the headphones for a while.
But I think when we think about what, jeez, just keeps on going.
Full multi-core action. It's just 1995.
It's the hippie headband that throws me
off.
The
headband's a little weird.
Just when I'm about to sort of say, okay, to each his own, it's the headband.
Mac Pro Jesus turned water into.
And at this moment, how many hundreds or thousands of people watch this are saying, that guy got his Mac Pro.
Where's my Mac Pro? Damn you all to hell. All right.
Johnny Ive, how are you feeling about yourself right now? You feeling good about yourself right now?
Can't innovate my ass.
I can never unsee that.
credit to David HB on Flickr. Or I'm sorry, Davin, not David. Davin HB. Davin Haukebo Bowl, B-O-L, if you want to see these pictures. You may flee to Flickr and see them all in great detail. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. Yes, the greatest bookstore in the world as far as I'm concerned. I don't read with my eyes. I read with my ears. I listen to great literature, nonfiction, fiction. I said I probably used the wrong verb, that I read the Amazon book by Brad Stone, The Everything Store. I listened to it on audible.com. And I just loved it. It's a great way to listen to books. Our friend Daniel Suarez has a new book. He's coming in on Monday, less than a week from today, to talk about his new book, Influx, which is phenomenal. Now, you can't listen to it yet. It won't be out for two more days, but you could pre-order it. And I'm going to tell you how you can get it for free right now. If you visit audible.com/MacBreak, 13 hours, 45 minutes. If you get it by Thursday, you'll have enough time to read it over the weekend and then listen to the interview on Monday. That's my plan for you. And for free, too. You'll be signing up for the Gold account. That's 30 days free. Your first month is free. That means your first credit is free. Your first book is free. Cancel at any time in the first 30 days and you will pay nothing, but the book is yours forever. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. That gold subscription is a great way to listen to audible.com. What are you listening to these days, Andy? I always like to find out what Andy's listening to.
Oh, so happy when this hit Audible. Actually, was first published and then hit Audible. There is this massive obsessively researched history of the Beatles. That part one just was released about a year ago. It's called Tune In, The Beatles All These Years by Mark Lewison. And we're not talking about, okay, let's how long did it take to record Let It Be and who played what? It starts off with, here's the history of Liverpool, and here is the great-great-grandparents of John Lennon, and here's the here's the cobbler shop where this person who sold John Lennon a pencil we used to own before he was sent out of the county for stealing a pig. It is meant to be absolutely obsessively researched and comprehensive in every detail. Three parts. You can, if the first part is called Tune In, you can guess that the second part is going to be called Turn On, and the third is Drop Out.
I like it.
Part one only takes you as far as the start of the British invasion. I think it goes all the way to They're going to the U.S. for their first appearance at the Ed Sullivan Show. But you will hear everything going on. And if you're picking a book for like a free book, this one, part one is 43 hours and 48 minutes long. I am barely 6 hours into it so far. So again, if you really want to say I'm going to get the equivalent of about 40 books out of my free offer, this is a good one to go for. And also, I have a feeling that if you have an interest in the Beatles, or if you have an interest in that aspect of pop culture, this will be pretty much the only series of books you're going to need to know. This is the Harry Potter series of Beatles books.
Wow. You know, I've read all the great Beatles books, and there have been quite a few of them because I'm a big Beatles fan. But this sounds like the definitive bio.
It's pretty good. You have to sort of reset your head before, again, this is part one. They do go very, very far back.
Yeah.
But the book wants to make sure you understand the context of everything that's going on. But once your head gets into gets used to the fact that we're not going to find out about Yoko Ono and how she might have disrupted anything for quite some time yet, you sort of calm down and you start to appreciate the tapestry the journey that he's leading you on.
You got another 80 hours before Yoko he makes an appearance in these books. Are you aware of this book, Don McAllister? You live in Liverpool.
I'm not aware of that one, but it looks very interesting, especially with the background to it as well. I'll certainly be checking that out.
I don't know if you know, but here in the States, it's been a big kind of Beatle thing because the 50th anniversary of the Beatles' first appearance in the United States was a week ago. Mm-hmm. And so CNN's, there was a Grammy special. Paul and Ringo performed together on it and so forth. So there's kind of a Beatle, second wave of Beatlemania going on in the U.S. right now.
I don't know if you got it in the U.S., but we also got a Beatles, it wasn't so much a full channel on the Apple TV, but we did get...
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, I saw that as well. So we've seen it in the press as well, you know, that there's been some events going across over the pond.
Do Liverpudlians today think of them as favorite sons and look proudly at them? Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, it's a big part of the renaissance of Liverpool, to be honest, because, you know, the docks have all been redeveloped. We've got museums, not just for the Beatles, but, you know, for the whole history of the port, because it's quite a famous as a port, Liverpool's quite pronounced in England. But the Beatles, you know, local history, we have a lot of Beatles museums. You can go and visit Paul's and John's houses as well. They're now owned by the National Trust. And they've been renovated to the 1960s, so you can actually... I'm not sure if you can go in John Lennon's, but you certainly go in Paul McCartney. You can go on a tour, and there's, a magical mystery tour bus that takes you around, and you can get taxi tours that take you to various places. And lots of the songs are actually real places in Liverpool, like Strawberry Fields and Penny Lane.
Sure, sure.
And so you can see all those. Yeah, it's quite a big thing. And we have a themed Beatle hotel as well called the Hard Days.
Wow, like Hogwarts. Well, you know, as usual, Andy, you've changed my next Audible purchase. My credits come up February 22nd in a few days. So now I'm going to make Tune In, The Beatles All These Years, and Daniel Suarez's book, my next listen on audible.com. Influx or Tune In, your choice, but you're going to get one of them for free. audible.com/MacBreak. I'm telling you, it's the best way, you know, in your car, at the gym, when you're doing the laundry, whatever. I listen to Audible all the time. I love it. Audible.com/MacBreak. We thank them for their support over these many, many years of MacBreak Weekly. Yeah, now I have to order that book. This is exciting. I didn't know about this.
Actually, it reminds me, my claim to fame is that I actually saw the Penny Lane video being filmed when I was...
Really? when you were a kid.
I used to go to school in Wavertree, where I originally came from, and that's where Paul, I think, originally came from as well. But our playing fields, the school where I was at didn't have a local playing field, so we used to go to Penny Lane, a place called Grove Mount, and on the school bus, we used to have a bus there, and we saw this weird policeman or something, or this military man on a horse with a camera spinning round. We saw later it was they were actually filming the video for Penny Lane.
So that's really neat.
There's actually a shot of the bus. It might have been the bus I was on in that video as well. One of the green buses.
Don McAllister is in the video for Penny Lane. Look closely and you will see.
Now, I don't know if you like see a therapist for any reason, but you should just like bring that up just as a memory from childhood, just to see how many sessions before the therapist actually figures out, oh, wait, no, this is not just like an imaginary thing. You actually did see someone on horse, a military man on horseback being surrounded by cameras. This is not an offshoot of your persecution complex as a result of being a podcaster.
But how many, I mean, really the cultural influence of the Beatles, how many of us can hear the words Penny Lane and not start in our heads going, Penny Lane, there is a marble town. I mean, it just comes immediately. It's so much part of our cultural background. You're very lucky, Don. That's cool.
Yeah, it's good.
So if you are not Daveen and you didn't have Macternity recently, you may be disappointed to know that Mac Pro ship dates are now April, according to the store. And that if you wish, you could spend 50% more and buy it on eBay. A little profiteering going on.
Mac Pro scalpers.
Ship estimates for new orders in the U.S., China, France, Germany, Japan, and the U.K. all heading into April. Is it short supply? Is it excessive demand? Renee, do you have any ideas on this?
Well, I mean, they're doing it in one factory in the U.S., and Apple on all these conference calls talks about being in balance, and it's a brand new product. Everyone who wants one has been waiting for it for years, so they all ordered it immediately. And what we're seeing with the dates is they keep pushing out 6 weeks. So when you go into a new month and it leaps, it seems like it's even further away, but it's still roughly 6 weeks away. So it's not getting worse, but it's not getting better yet. And until they meet that initial demand, it's not going to get better anytime soon.
Now, I'm looking at the store and I see available to ship April, but available for pickup. But that's same date, right? It doesn't mean I can go to the Apple store and get it tomorrow. I would get it in April. Is that right?
If you have a business rep, you can go and see what they can do for you. And sometimes there's different supply for the stores than there is for online, but you're probably not going to get it much, if any at all, earlier than that ship date, fortunately.
And I think that this is actually one of the real challenges of doing this kind of work in the U.S. is because one of the things that China has been very good at is when they need to ramp, you know, another 30,000 people or 10,000 people or whatever, that has been more doable than necessarily doing that in the U.S. And so I think this is also some teething, of building a U.S. firm, which I think that Apple is very committed to, and I applaud them for doing that. But I think that it is more challenging to produce in mass here. I don't think
I'm going
to
make
infrastructure anymore.
I'm going to make a wild guess that it is not the Texas factory that's the problem. I bet you they can produce enough Mac Pros to fulfill demand. But there are components in here that I bet are in shorter supply than the Mac Pro itself, like those Fire Pro cards. Doesn't that seem credible?
This is the only product they could probably manufacture in the U.S. because this kind of short supply of any other product would be untenable for them. So they're taking all the pain on the Mac Pro. But I think you're right. It's a confluence of the components plus the manufacturing plus a new facility plus a brand new product, which often has higher yield rate issues than other products.
Yeah.
One wonders as well if it's not a pricing thing as well, because I think I've seen plenty of articles on the net saying that you can't actually buy a Mac Pro, the raw components, for the same price, and it's such a good deal because the high-end components.
Exactly.
I'm wondering whether or not they are constrained, not physically because it's a low yield, but because they've got X amount of processors or X amount of the video components at a set price, and they can only sort of ramp that up.
There are two components in here which are very, very expensive, which I bet you are in short supply, and that would be the Xeon E5, the Intel processor, which is brand new and probably rarer than hen's teeth. And by the way, thousands of dollars by itself, like $2,000. And then these AMD Fire Pro workstation GPUs. I'm feeling more and more guilty about my Mac Pro.
But you love it, Leo.
I love it.
Are there some photos you haven't posted
all of us, yet? All of us are waiting.
The nude photos will be on my Flickr stream later. Yes.
And how hard are you pushing that, Leo? I mean,
Not at all! I'm surfing the net and getting email. I could be using a Chromebook.
Well. Leo, I can trade you a great iMac for your Mac Pro.
Get in line, Alex Lindsay, because remember, I have a stable of editors here who are using 3-year-old Mac Pros, each and every one of which keeps saying to me every single day, you know that Mac Pro you have at home? You don't really need dual core, dual Fire Pro GPUs, do you?
If you really loved it, Leo, you would let it go.
It might be time to hire a food taster. Just inside the brick house, that's all.
See, I gave up my WWDC ticket because I felt guilty about going, you know, and putting a proper developer onto their place. So that's why, I think you might have to do the same, Leo.
I've put in a proper editor out of his place. Hey, are we going to see a new Mac Mini? The drumbeat pretty strong that it's time for a new Mac Mini. According to one source, the Belgian online store, computer store, showed an i7-based Mac Mini and a Haswell-based Mac Mini. But, of course, that could just be a dummy ad. That doesn't mean Apple's doing it.
Well, I sure hope they do. I mean, to be honest with you, in many ways, I'm more excited about a new Mac Mini that was beefier than necessarily a Mac Pro. I mean, a Mac Pro, I need here and there, but one of the reasons we're looking at buying some of the Mac Pros that we're looking at getting once they become more available is actually more to do with things that we would do with a Mac Mini. It's just that the Mac Mini graphics processor isn't quite fast enough. The CPU isn't quite fast enough.
What would it need? Really, what would you have to have to make it a competitor?
Well, we need a graphics processor in the Mac Mini that is comparable to the MacBook Pro.
Have they ever used a dedicated GPU in a Mac Mini? No.
I don't think so.
You're going to get the Iris Pro graphics at best. Yeah. Is that good enough?
No, probably not. I mean, I think that, I mean, those are the kind of things. Like, it's being able to get a dedicated processor, being able to have some of the new chips. Those are the primary things that we'd love to, that I would love to see, you know, in that. And that would actually, I'd be much more interested in that than the Mac Mini. I think it's actually one of the reasons that I think Apple will get through the shipping issues that it's had with the Mac Pro before it'll release the Mac Mini, because there's a lot of us, if the Mac Mini came out tomorrow, there's a lot of us that would buy 5 Mac Minis instead of 5 Mac Pros to do a lot of the things we have, because we have a need to go faster than what the Mac Mini is doing, right. But we don't necessarily have a need to go all the way up to a Mac Pro.
If you wanted to test what this Mac Mini might be like, if you got the $2,000 MacBook Pro, it has Haswell i7, it has the top-of-the-line Iris Pro 5200 graphics. It would be the closest thing, I think, to what a Mac Mini would be. Renate, am I wrong? Somebody in the chat room says, no, there are Mac Minis with GPU.
So the interesting thing for me is, and I've heard nothing about a new Mac Mini. It's completely MIA as far as I know. Peter Cohen had a good piece on it saying that the current Mac Mini is still tied to the old MacBook Pro architecture, not the Retina MacBook
Pro. Not the new MacBook Pro.
Yeah, the old one. And they'll have to re-architect it, and that could include PCIe, SSD on PCIe and much faster RAM and all these things. But it would be a substantially new internal, whether it gets an external update or not, on the inside, it would be a substantially new computer, and it would require the new Haswell chipsets and all that. And it could simply be a matter of Apple can only do so many things at a time, and come WWDC, we'll see the new generation Retina MacBook Pros and the new Mac Mini to go with it. That's about the only thing I can imagine. But like you said, it would be Iris graphics. It would be the Intel i7 processors. That kind of stuff Apple is unfortunately tied to Intel's roadmap entirely for.
The Norse god Jim Dalrymple at The Loop, talking about Peter Cohen's article, said it certainly will be interesting to see what Apple does. But he points out Apple's interest has been with the iPhone, the iPad, the MacBook Pro, and I guess you'd have to include the Mac Pro, and not so much the Mini. Is there a market for the Mini? Obviously, Alex Lindsay would buy thousands.
Home theater PCs, education PCs, servers.
Yeah.
Also, I think...
Go ahead, Andy.
I was about to say, I think that the center of gravity of computing is moving more towards a machine like the Mac Mini than even the iMac. Because if you think about it, the value of a Mac in 2014 is a box that, yes, you sit down at it, you have a you have a monitor connected and a keyboard connected to it, and you do work on it. But it's just as helpful to you as a device that serves content to all the other devices inside your house. Even if you were to buy it just as an accessory for your iPad, there are dumber ways to spend $500 towards that goal than buying a Mac Mini, putting it on, and using it as a headless server, just so that anytime you want to run a Mac app on your iPad, it's there for you. So I'm just giving a couple of different examples of the ways that people are using computers differently today than they were even 5 years ago, and the way that the iTunes ecosystem and the new features of iOS 7 and Mavericks help you to leverage that. So I would not be surprised if the world kind of realized that perhaps they're chasing the wrong goat here by going for a Mac Pro or going for an iMac, when this much more affordable machine that uses stuff that you already have can deliver so much of what you actually need, not just to the desktop, but to the entire house and the rest of this, your devices on the internet.
You know, given the size of the Mac Pro, here's what we'll do. When they come out with a new Mac Mini, I'm going to do a blind A-B test. I'm going to have my dual monitors. Behind them will be a Mac Pro and the new Mac Mini and a little switch, and we'll put Chad back there switching, and I will be using. And if I could tell the difference between the new Mac Mini and the Mac Pro, then I get to keep the Mac Pro. But if I can't, then the editors get it. How about that?
If the new Mac Mini can drive your dual 4K displays, you won't be able to tell the difference.
They're not 4K. They're just dual 27-inch Apple Cinema displays.
Well, the more people I talk to about this, the more convinced I am that today, at least, the only people who get a real tangible benefit from the new Mac Pro are Xcode developers and people who are doing editing in Final Cut. Everybody else is not really going to even see the performance boost that they are hoping for.
I'm really with Alex. I do think that they've kept back the Mac Mini because it would have impacted on Mac Pro sales.
Wow.
A true pro is going to go for the Mac Pro, but there's an awful lot of people who are semi-pro or...
Morons like Leo is what you're saying.
No. People who want really powerful
machines. Tastemakers, influencers.
That's it, I'm the tastemaker.
Fashionistas.
But, you put the relative price between them and the performance differential of the yet-to-be-released Mac Mini, and I bet you a lot of people would have waited... And gone with the
absolutely.
Mac Mini rather than
and there's a lot of things that we use them for. I mean, because we probably have a lot of Mac Minis. I don't know exactly how many we have, but there's a lot of them. But we use them frequently to just glue things together. And for instance, we might have multiple Hangouts going out, so we have five or six of them that we used to use for serving, and then we just decided that we weren't getting the same frame rate that we really wanted out of those compared to the laptops. And that's one of the reasons that we phased them out and went back to laptops to run that. And so, but those are the kind of things that, there's all kinds of heads-up displays and other things. And if I was running a classroom, I'd much rather use Mac Mini all stacked, cooled in a little case where no one's touching them, and just have monitors and keyboards, out on a classroom. We use iMacs in Rwanda. We have 40 of them there. But the reason that we use them there is specifically because of the graphics processors and being able, because we're doing 3D and video and everything else, we can't quite do that with Mac Minis. But if I was running a classroom that wasn't teaching media, I would definitely use Mac Minis and then just pipe all those things out, because then you set that all up and now it's all centralized, it's secure, it's taken care of, and people only touch what they want. What I'd really love to do for some of those classes, of course, is to get a more open architecture. Apple TV, I think, for education, I think there's a lot of interesting things that you could do with that as well. You're talking about distributed.
Intel makes a similar device, the NUC. I'm curious how well that's selling. Now, it's a Celeron. It's not a Haswell.
What's it called?
The NUC, the new unit of computing. Oh, yeah. But it's, it's like a hockey puck. Maybe it's a little bit big, more like an Apple TV size than a Mac Mini size. I'm curious how well that's selling. So do you think that Apple will wait until, say, supplies of the Mac Pro are caught up and everybody they think who wants a Mac Pro has bought one, and then release a Mac Mini?
I think so. I mean, I think that one of the things that I think that if you had a significant – they put a lot into that Mac Pro, and if you had a significantly improved Mac Mini, I think there's a lot of people. Like me, I would – instead of buying 8 Mac Pros, which is what we're planning to buy as soon as they're available, we would drop that to 2 or 3 immediately.
What if
and move to the Mac Minis?
They made it look like a Mac Pro, but the size of a soda can.
I don't. The I want the form factor. I want the Mac Mini form factor. I don't want them to change it. Are you not?
How about a Mac Mini that
Mac
could be inserted
Mini?
Nasally?
I think the odds are, though, that if Apple had a Mac Mini ready to go, you would be hearing more about it. Like, it would have leaked by now. There would be a lot more rumors about it. They generally tend to go to race to that finish line and then just make it in time to release it, and then they have an event.
Absolutely. I think that if we're not seeing a Mac Mini, it's not necessarily because they're trying to manipulate the market into buying more Mac Pros. I do think that it's simply because it is not as big a priority for them right now as a really nice Mac Pro is. Also, when you think about it, you're not really, when people hit the Apple Store, they've got cash in their hand. If they can put $3,000 of that into a Mac Pro, they would actually buy it if they could get it sometime this week. When they see that they're going to have to wait 3 months for it, that money just does not go to Apple. You have to think about if they were to have released a brand new Mac Mini in January, let's say, and they had enough devices to suit every demand, everyone who has $500, $600, $700, $800, $1,000 to spend on it, how many of those they'd be able to sell? Because I do think that the people who come in for a Mac Pro, they will look at the Mac Mini and they will say, they will have that lizard response that says that, yes, but that is a flat, rounded off aluminum box, the likes of which I have seen 100 times before. This is columnar and it's shiny and I want to just take off my shirt and pull it into bed with me and kiss it. So I don't think those people who want a Mac Pro would be distracted by a new Mac Mini with better specs.
They get both.
I think pros.
Ooh, you're right. How about they start selling like the Mac Mini as a plinth for the Mac Pro?
It's only available in bundle deal number 7.
Special. It could be shaped like a hand.
They could have the
holding the Mac Pro.
I just think it's an orb that floats on top of the heat pump.
Ooh, that'd be good. Yeah, just floats from the air column. On the air column. Make it pretty light.
No.
Finally, a use for the Nexus Q.
Right.
By the way, apparently there are Intel NUCs with the i5, as much as an i5, but no i7s. Gigabyte does make some i7 NUC style computing devices. Well, we are all voting for new Mac Minis. I don't know if Apple's listening, but if you want to hustle along with those,
Apple hears all your prayers, Leo.
Yeah.
Sometimes the answer is not yet.
Sometimes the answer is no. Yeah. Taking a break. Come back with more. Alex Lindsay is here from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, where he looks, you know, you look like you're in the next Die Hard.
I didn't bring a ripped up shirt.
Yeah.
You know, for that and get a little grease on here and everything else.
Yippee-ki-yay, Alex Lindsay. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com. We have from Liverpool, the man behind Screencasts Online, a great site, screencastsonline.com, to learn how to use Mac software. Mr. Don McAllister, things going well at Screencasts Online?
Yeah, going very, very well. Yeah. And of course, we cover the iPad and the iPhone as well, so it's not just Macs. Now we do everything.
But everything! Everywhere. Going on any cruises soon?
Well, we've got the Mac Mania 17 coming up in a couple of months. Well, no, June. So that's the one that calls into Liverpool. The
Will you join the boat in Liverpool or will you go to London or somewhere?
No, I think we leave from, I think it's Harwich, and then it goes to northern France and then the Channel Islands. It goes to Ireland and then it goes to Wales and then it goes to Liverpool and then up to Scotland and then back to Harwich.
That sounds like a fun cruise. How long is that, though? That sounds 2 weeks.
I think it's 10 days. Yeah, that's 10 days.
That's a lot of work.
That must be so cool to know that when you're planning ahead, saying, well, I'm going to be in Liverpool on Thursday, so I'll just do laundry. I'll
go home, hop off the ship,
my phone,
do the laundry.
I only need to pack 2 pairs of underwear.
Yeah, and you know, your phone will work everywhere except France. But nobody's phone works in France.
We got the itinerary, you know, because they do shore excursions at each port, and I was fascinated to see what they did for Liverpool. And there's quite a few, because they cover the northwest of England as well, so you can go to Chester, you can go to Wales. You can do a Titanic tour around Liverpool because that's
that's where it was built. That's right.
Lots of links with the Titanic, or you can do the obligatory Beatles tour as well. So I'm deciding which tour to go on.
Where would I get off the boat to see Stonehenge?
That'd be Southampton.
Down in the south there. Yeah, and you don't want to go see the Magna Carta because it's here. They shipped it over here. Did you know that?
I did not know.
First time it's ever left. What it was? It's in a church.
Oh, right.
Okay. Yeah, first time it's ever left the church. They put it in a special suitcase and flew it to the U.S.
So temporarily, at least, your country is without a basis of government.
Yeah, sorry.
We have that. We have that now.
The nobles can now take over again. Queen Kate. It's in Houston, just so you know.
Okay.
For the most humid town in America. they put in a special aluminum and steel case with monitors, wrapped it in special packaging. Then they put it on a plane to cross the Atlantic Ocean. It's the Magna Carta has never before left the English shores. It's been at Hereford Chapel near the Welsh border, right up near you, for 800 years, ever since the nobles forced King John to sign that at Runnymede. John C. Dvorak was there. He told me all about it. Our show today brought to you by Squarespace.com. You saw the Super Bowl commercial, A Better Web Awaits, and it starts with your website. Let's not have that ugly, cluttered, disgusting, poorly designed internet. Let's have a gorgeous design for your site with Squarespace.com. It's as simple as going to Squarespace.com, clicking that white Get Started button, taking a look at the 25 gorgeous templates, some brand new ones in there, the logo creator tool. So if you don't have the money for a designer, you can actually do your own logo, which is really cool. It's easy to use. You start with a design. Here, let's look at Momentum. These are all mobile responsive, which means they look great on any size screen, even that 4K screen or an iPhone screen. They all have e-commerce enabled, so you don't have to worry about a special mobile site or a special e-commerce site. It's everywhere. It fits. It works. And then the beauty is, and you'll see the example sites designed with any template you're looking at. It's really cool because you can really see what these sites in action look like. Gorgeous, full color, not cluttered, not, you know, sites that beckon to you. I think Squarespace is great. 2 weeks free. You don't need to give them a credit card. The idea is here's a chance to try it out, to see what it looks like. You can even use their importers to import your existing content, including all the links, all the images, even the contents and the comments, so that instantly that site. And by the way, it's great because you go, yeah, my content doesn't look good in this template. Just try another one. Customize it to your heart's content, too, with a drag and drop, point and click. Doesn't take anything. This Momentum is great because it's a full bleed site. So the images just go all the way to the edges of the screen. It's very image specific. That's why a lot of photographers and artists love Squarespace for their portfolios. But you can, you want a text heavy site? They've got templates too for that. You can do anything you want. Here's a Hudson. This is a much more text specific site. And you can see what some people have done with Hudson in terms of text. Of course, a lot of images too. I just feel like Squarespace is a great place to play. Go there, play with it. If you decide to buy, all I ask is to use the offer code MacBreak2. You'll want to. That takes 10% off their already low prices. Squarespace starts as low as $8 a month when you buy the annual plan, and that includes the ability to sell a product and accept donations. So it's great if you want to create a site for a nonprofit or a fund drive. $8 a month. That's it, and that includes a custom domain name when you sign up for a year. $16 for the professional site. That means unlimited bandwidth, unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. You could sell up to 20 products. The developer platform is fabulous. If you do know HTML, CSS, JavaScript like that, they have a great developer platform. The full e-commerce site, which gives you not only unlimited bandwidth and pages and galleries and blogs and storage, but fully integrated e-commerce for unlimited products, digital, physical, or service. They even help you out with real-time carrier shipping, label printing, integrated accounting. Squarespace, that's $24 a month. Use our offer code MacBreak2. You'll take 10% right off the top there. Squarespace. Look, you made a new logo for us with a logo creator.
It was quick and easy. And the time it took you to read that.
Hundreds of Google fonts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know how many icons in there, but just thousands of icons that you can choose. Oh, look at that.
What a fancy one.
I love this. Yeah, MacBreak Weekly and Scribble.
Yeah, here, let's do it in Arial. Just make everyone freak out.
It's a very
out.
Simple site.
Yeah.
Oh, Comic Sans. No, that's Tecton, probably.
Do we have? We might have something.
Don't know. Sure. No. Oh, I think Squarespace would not allow you to use Comic Sans
Weekly. That makes
that's sense. Good. I like that. It's very, very 50s, 60s. I mean, That's a Peter. That's our Peter Max version, speaking of Liverpool. Squarespace.com, offer code MacBreak2. Try it today. You're going to love it. And here's 15 years of Apple's home pages. It's on SlideShare. Oh, my God, look how bad these looked. Introducing the Newton.
They were just getting started.
The eMate 300.
The GeoCities Apple pages.
Hello, yes. Again. They're selling the iMac. Whoa,
how much
it's
you
want okay.
to bet those were done in BB Edit?
You know, they were. They used BB Edit for a long time. Yeah. So these probably all are BB Edit pages.
See, the freaky thing is when sometimes you actually go to a modern website and suddenly like it collapses down to that like 800 pixel wide formatting and you know that, oh, they haven't really updated this layout since 1998.
This should look, though, I mean, this is when it starts. They've got the tabs. This starts to look a little bit like the actual Apple site today. But this goes back to OS 9. Mm-hmm. And when they're doing cards, even then they had cards. Apple keeps trying that idea. Your Mac is new venue for indie filmmakers, says the news headline. Apple designed. This is year 2000, May 2000. Oh, we had those Canon XL2 cameras. That's how Twit started.
It's actually the SL1S, but yeah.
Is that an SL1? You recognize that?
Yeah, the XL2, I think, had a different, it had a sort of conformed back body, and that's the
you're right.
Red. Sort of
Chad,
blocky.
You're kind of an XL Canon XL
I
nerd.
I was in love with the XL series.
I didn't know this about you. Make your own ZR10. That was remember that?
We called that the ZR bad boy.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It was cheap.
Yeah, it was horrible. You got this tiny little screen. The the login capture sync would go out all the time on those things.
Buy now with one click. This is probably what Apple got sued when Apple got sued by Amazon. Yeah. Because Amazon owned that patent, the one click buy. Maybe they made a deal.
They really did. Perfect the Jelly Belly button.
Oh, look at that! That is lickable if ever there was a jelly button. Holy cow!
It was just it took a lot of Photoshop work to do that well.
There's Office Mac introducing the best version of Office ever. More Mac-like features. It's kind of like
free
a Mac
CD storage case as well.
I liked that case. Remember that case?
Yeah.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, my Mac, yours too, Andy Anako. He's got one right behind him, the Cube. And look at that monitor. What is it? A 15-inch monitor? Wow. We're still in the year 2000.
Super. It was the speakers that I really dug.
Yeah, the little round speakers. Yeah.
These little grapefruit speakers.
Yeah.
Remember what Apple used to, you'd buy a computer, you'd get accessories with it.
Yeah, like a keyboard.
And someone inside Apple would say, but wait a minute, that'll make the box bigger. And then he'd be shouted out saying, no, we want to give things to our customers instead of just the box.
Here's the first titanium PowerBook. This is, it says 2013. That's not the case. This is like 2001 or 2002.
The Wi-Fi. Remember the Wi-Fi on the titanium was... worked for about 10 feet.
Yeah, because it was in a metal case.
It turns out you put an antenna inside of metal.
Faraday cage MacBook. rip, mix, burn. I bet the music industry loved that. This is probably, now that we look at it, this is Steve Jobs going to the music industry. Mm. Rip, mix, burn.
And doesn't it freak you out to see a Mac with so much distracting texture on
it? That horrible.
I think it's cool. I don't think that's bad or the new Macs are bad either. But it is such an emphatic statement about how their thinking has changed about design.
People, Pizza Box flower says it's power. The Dalmatian Mac,
blue Dalmatian, and they had flower power as well.
Oh, that's right. Dalmatian. Here you go, flower power. Wow, this is very 60s. Now shipping the power of Unix. This is the first OS X box with the simplicity and elegance of Macintosh. Final Cut Pro 2, PowerBook G4. This is fun. Power Mac G4 with SuperDrive now shipping. Again, power to burn. They're really pushing the burn. I think this is really a way of kind of slapping the music industry into submission. Update to Mac OS X, says the headline. Enables CD burning. The new iBook. It had modem, Ethernet, FireWire, USB, RGB, and an AV plug. How many of these ports are gone forever? No Ethernet, no FireWire.
You know when the Retinas came out, and Andy said, you know, the big thing you're going to miss is, you know, and Andy and I argued about the fact that I didn't think we would miss the Ethernet cable. And Andy, I just wanted to let you know that I probably think about you once a day, just when I can't find it.
Converter. We miss the Ethernet cable.
Alex,
so long as you're thinking about me.
All has to have a hard line, and I have to plug this in, and I'm always like, Andy was right.
What do they call this? The plastic power Mac. That was a beautiful one. Marques Brownlee, MKBHD, has a few of these in the background of his shot. I love always seeing this. 9/11. This is the 9/11 page. Our thoughts are with those who were affected by the tragic events this week. And then a link to the Red Cross. That's tasteful. Very tasteful. Very nicely done. OS 10, 10.1. They're still selling... say hello to iPod. 1,000 songs in your pocket. That's 2001 now. Mm-hmm. Late 2001. Adobe Illustrator 10. Creative Freedom. This really is quite the trip. George Harrison passed. Remember, Steve Jobs, a big Beatles fan.
Shows how important Office and Adobe were to them back then.
Yeah. Right on the front, Office Mac. And then before that, Adobe Illustrator. Yeah.
Using the days before Adobe dragging its feet on Photoshop, the Photoshop update.
Right.
Yes.
$50,000 editing system, now 98% off. Introducing Final Cut Pro 3. Titanium PowerBook G4 comes with a new combo drive. Burn CDs anywhere. Boy, the X-Serve, remember that?
May she rest in peace.
May she rest in peace, $2,999. This is important. That X-Serve, roughly the same cost as a Mac Pro. What did you get in the year 2002 for an X-Serve for $3,000? Dual gigahertz G4 processors, single gigahertz, 2 megs of L3 cache, 2 gigs of SD RAM. Get ready for this, 480 gigabytes hard drive. You did get dual gigabit Ethernet, but remember, it's a network machine. OS X server.
Redundant power supply.
Redundant power supplies. There's the white 700 megahertz iBook. 30 gig hard drive. 100 megahertz system bus. I remember when they said that, I was like, wow. Here's the eMac for education, the most affordable G4 system at $1,099. What's interesting, how consistent Apple's pricing has been, even 10, mm-hmm. 15 years later. They understand that $1,000 to $1,200 price point is a critical price point for the iMac. iTunes 3, smart playlists, ratings, enhanced effects. I think this was also the one that had podcasts.
My
gorgeous brushed metal.
Yeah.
The floating screen iMac. Still one of my favorite computer designs.
Yeah.
Ever.
Oh, yeah.
So Pixar.
The Johnny Ive, Leonard Connie's Johnny Ive book talks a lot about that. Really neat. The new iPod family now up to 20 gigs, starting at just $299 for 5 gigs.
Now for PC, too.
Oh, that was a big one. Steve Jobs fought that every step of the way. Didn't want to do a Windows version of iTunes, but fortunately, his team convinced him over his dead body that was a good idea. OS X Jaguar. Chad, are you? You want to say something? I see you. The new Power Mac G4 with dual processors, $1,699. iSync. Oh, remember that?
Yeah.
That never worked.
Yeah, but it was a great idea. I mean, as we go through these pages, we keep revisiting days when you just understood that if you wanted to move an address from one device to another,
so
you're going to have to keep just type it into the new device.
Or you're going to end up with 6 of them.
Right.
And that was the other.
That's what happened with this.
Or even better, none of them.
Right.
Yeah. Sync is hard.
Yeah. Yeah. They put the Palm 5 logo there, but it always would disappear for me. It would just like would be there and then gone.
No, I distinctly remember one of the first times using iSync. And have you ever been so mad at your computer that you rationally know that this is an inanimate object, but you still have to talk to it anyway? And I just remember being right there in my office, talking to this machine saying, yeah, you see, I had this device that had no addresses in it, and I had this other machine that had about 800 addresses in it. And when I said sync, I just thought you'd understand that I wanted the device with no addresses in it to have everything. Not that, oh, I guess he wants no addresses on the big one, too. Okay, fine. I guess I'm just stupid. I've just been using computers since I was 10 years old. I'm a bit of a neophyte. I'm not what you'd call a techie. Yeah, I was just, and then I had to get into the car and drive in circles for about 2 hours at 1 a.m. because
We were pretty excited when the new iPod came out. Here I am on CNN.
The industry has also been rocked in recent years by something else, but it has been a good thing. We're talking about the iPod. A short time ago in our special series this week, iPod Nation, we showed you how and why the iPod has become an obsession.
This is showbiz tonight. This is how far I'd sunk.
iPod dummy, and you don't know the first thing about portable music, or even if you think you're an iPod aficionado, listen up. Joining us live from San Francisco is Leo Laporte. Leo is the author of Leo Laporte's Gadget Guide. Welcome, Leo. Good to see you.
Hi, Karen. Good to see you.
Thank you. First and foremost, for those who have no idea how this little white machine works, just explain what an iPod is and how it works, basically.
You know, and what really insert studio was that? Was that Media One?
A little computer.
Yes.
A little hard drive in it, some memory, a microprocessor, but it
doesn't. Leo, what a weird haircut you had way back then.
The part is on the other side.
I mean, God, you know.
I'm wearing exactly.
The fashions of the day.
That shirt really changed.
Probably looked pretty well back
later.
Then. You wouldn't be caught wearing that same jacket.
Actually wearing the same clothes. 10 years later.
It is probably, it's actually the same jacket, isn't it?
What makes this,
I think it is.
Because it has a hard drive.
I was once giving a talk, and for some reason, I had to refer to like a Macworld Expo of like 10 years earlier, and I had a picture of myself like with the thing that I was talking about, and I was like 5 minutes into my explanation about a certain trend and a certain technology, but I had to stop and realize that I'm wearing the same shirt, the same vest, the same pants. I mean, literally the exact same shirt.
Damn you, YouTube! Damn you!
I'm talking for those people who are afraid of computers.
Right.
These
nice
are
set,
easy
huh?
programs to use.
I think it's all green screen.
Explanatory how you click and buy a song, right?
Well, it's as easy as a computer program can be. I mean, a lot of people are, you know, baffled by the whole idea.
Actually,
though,
if we do like a multi-screen with like that video and Alex, it's like CNN and like from our correspondent in San Francisco, our correspondent in Washington.
Yeah. Or you buy the music. For now, we go to Alex Lindsay in Washington to explain the Newton.
It's on the computer. Once it's on the computer, of course.
Actually, it could be cool because like while Leo is talking in that video, like Alice could just be talking over, and it would be exactly like any news like panel discussion.
It's all the same. I hated doing those show bits. So let's go back. That was prompted by somebody in the chat room. Thank you. Remember this? The Switch ads? My PC wasn't plug and play. It was plug and get mad. Janie Porsche. She saved Christmas. Aw. Thank you, Janie. I do it all on my Mac. Johnny Jacklone.
That's my future Mac Pro owner.
Is this a joke? Get out of your Windows world. It's not
Sheldon.
Worth it. I'll never go
it's
back.
Cooper.
It's Jeremiah Kohick. He is, he's now, I don't know. Oh, look, Richard Ziskin. He owns the America Umbrella Company. If you have a small business, get a Mac. So this is obviously a campaign. There's Jimmy Carter.
That guy we flashed before, he wrote an essay about when Steve Jobs passed away. Because I guess he's like sort of semi kept in touch with Steve, and he was there for the debut of the MacBook Air. And
Dick Ziskin,
kind of interesting. That guy,
Gautam Godse.
I think if I'm remembering correctly,
he's a nice looking guy. There's Jimmy.
My brain did a pattern recognition thing, and I had to do.
You're amazing. If you actually get that, if that's not just something that a fantasy, that's pretty impressive. iBook, the most affordable portable Mac ever, $1,000, right?
You know? Entry level.
Director MX for Mac OS X. This is when they still liked Macromedia.
That one makes sense. Macromedia.
You walk through all of these different products and how weird it is to see them promoting other people's products on the front page.
Right.
In 2014, there's only one product we've seen that they have not replaced with their own branded version, and that's Photoshop. And
that's
so
right.
now I'm suddenly brand new, wondering, oh, so that's the cheese is standing alone. At what point does Apple simply say, okay, ship it? The thing that you built 3 years ago and you've been maintaining ever since for every new upgrade. Yep, ship it.
Final Cut Pro 4, DVD Studio Pro, the late lamented DVD Studio Pro 2, Shake 3. They still do Shake, right, Alex?
Nope, no Shake.
No Shake. Okay.
It's gone.
Hi. Oh, the new Adobe Creative Suite, built for Mac OS X, optimized for the G5. Here it is. That's yours, Andy, the 20-inch iMac, the Luxo Lamp iMac. $21.99, see? They're very consistent. It's interesting how consistent.
It was a great idea.
Yeah.
It was definitely a great idea.
You've got iTunes. Welcome, AOL members. Wow. It's like Microsoft Office for the rest of your life. Here's where the transition starts to begin. iLife.
That sounds like a threat.
Yeah.
You've been sentenced to Microsoft Office for the rest of your life. Until the rest of your natural days. And
good
God
Lord.
Have mercy on your soul.
Good Lord. iPod, iPod Mini. That's the new one. In color. 100 million free songs. Drink Pepsi. Remember this one? They were giving away Pepsi. You drank a Pepsi inside the cap. It was an iTunes song. God, you'd never see that today on Apple's site. Pepsi, a Pepsi takeover. iTunes 4.5. 700,000 songs. It's now 20 million.
Yeah.
Amazing.
I got 700,000 songs on my iPad now.
Yeah. No, I think that's in the iTunes library. 700,000 legal tracks, including Disney and the Beastie Boys. Office 2004 for the Mac. Airport Express. This is really a fun history. iPod, your BMW. The first seamless integration of an iPod in an automobile. This is around 2004. The world's... we still have my 30-inch cinema display. Yep. Oh, why doesn't Apple make that anymore? Make a 4K. Yeah. I still have that. Somebody... Jason has that, right? You have the 30-inch, don't you, over there, Jason? I think he does.
He does. He's still using it.
Still uses it. That was a great... I missed that. That was a lot of reels. Now, the first 100 million downloads on iTunes. There you go. 100 million songs have been legally... Notice how they keep using the word legal. Legally downloaded, for a major milestone for online music. We're way, way past that. 10 billion, I think, right? There's Motion. $299. They got it down to 99, and then... Is it still 99? I think it is on the Mac Store.
Motion's now $50.
50, wow.
Yeah.
Logic
and
Pro?
That was a great deal. It was frustrating because Motion was 300, which I thought was a great deal, and then it was... And then it was only bundled with Final Cut Studio, which was a bad deal. And now it's $50, which is a fantastic deal.
The new iBook. I bought one of these for my sister, the U2 edition, black iPod with a red dial. I loved that. 20 gigs, $350. This all comes, I'm not going to go through all of it because there's a lot. This comes from the techblock.com, 15 years of Apple.com. Really cool slideshow on SlideShare. TheTechBlock.com. I really just kind of want to do the rest of the show going through that. It's awesome. Really awesome. Court grants Apple's motion to dismiss the Siri misrepresentation lawsuit. That's over. It's gone. It's done. Motion to dismiss after 2 years on Friday. The lawsuit alleged that Apple's 4S advertisements had misrepresented the capabilities of Siri. The judge says, you are out of here. I don't know if you can appeal a dismissal like that. Apple TV, should we talk about those rumors? Rene Ritchie,
yes.
To Apple to release an updated set-top box. Apparently, they're in talks with Time Warner Cable. Oh, never mind.
You're not far off then.
Oh, forget that. Do you think Comcast bought or trying to buy Time Warner Cable just because of that?
That would be hilarious.
It was the only cable company that would talk to Apple.
It's so funny because in North America, like the US and Canada, ISPs are allowed to own cable companies and vice versa. Like you have Comcast and NBC, and we have Roger, I think Shaw and Global and Rogers and Bell and CTV. And it just leads to all these horrible, horrible pairings that seem to slow down every good media evolution that we have coming to us.
If you're curious about, we're not going to talk too much about it, but if you're curious about the Time Warner Cable Comcast deal, we talked about it on Sunday on Twitter. And O'Malik was on it. It was great. And he said, you know what? It's going to go through. He said the regulators are not going to stop it. So
And well, the regulators are the officers now, right, and vice versa?
Yeah. The guy in charge of the FCC is a former cable company lobbyist. But furthermore, he says that the argument, which they will, the government will buy, is that because there's no overlapping customers, it doesn't make any change in the competitive environment. But of course it does, because it makes Comcast
anti-competitive.
Yeah, we're already non-competitive. The Comcast TWC would be the largest cable company and the largest ISP, have such dominance that I can guarantee you cable prices and broadband prices will go up, as they have been for 10 years without any oversight at all. So it's just guaranteed to bring the prices up on everything.
Well, and the place that it is overlapping, of course, is in the content. That's where it does overlap. It's not just the subscribers, and I think that's actually the play that Comcast is moving towards as well. And I think that it is it's definitely if the FCC was or the SEC or whoever's going to do this was aggressive about setting up what those rules are going to be, that there's auditable bandwidth net neutrality till 2025, it actually wouldn't be that bad if we actually could.
Well, it would do. How about 2018? Comcast, when Comcast merged with NBC, they made an agreement with the FCC that they would protect net neutrality, which they, by the way, are clearly not doing. But anyway, since nobody enforces anything, it doesn't matter. That would extend to Time Warner cable customers. They don't have a similar agreement. So, but 2018 is not so far off.
But I'm saying if we pushed it out to 2025,
we ain't going to do nothing, dude.
Dream
on. You're smoking something.
I'm saying if they did that, it would be a good deal. If they don't do that, it's a bad deal. And I think that, I think Apple, who has the money to do it, needs to really think about disrupting the market with money. Like they need to either start buying up something there or they need to start building their own networks.
I hope they are going to come out with a new Apple set-top box. I presume their negotiations with TWC are dead. But that would have been an interesting thing. Now is a chance for Apple to make a cord cutter play, right?
Well, and I think they can. And again, they don't have to cover the whole United States to make their point. And Google has started playing in that area, but they don't have nearly that kind of cash, And I think that Apple, could do an enormous amount of damage in key markets where, it would be very clear to the cable industry if Apple keeps on going down this path, they're going to be done.
Here's what a deal with Time Warner would have done to an Apple TV. It would have added live channels, so that HBO, PBS, Bloomberg, Disney, ABC, ESPN. Those are already there. But imagine maybe locals. But all of that's gone. That I just kind of think this kills that. Renee, what are you hearing about a new Apple TV?
They've got a fantastic software team led by some of the best iOS engineers who used to work on the phone and other departments. They're all working on the Apple TV now. It sounds like a really fantastic software update. I'm hoping that there'll be some sort of SDK. The SDK has been sitting there for a while, not used. I'm guessing it'll be a game. Definitely a game SDK. I don't know if it'll go beyond games because it's hard to tell if, Twitterific is something you need to run on your television set, but absolutely games. Our channels might stay a partner program. The big problem with all this is exactly what Steve Jobs talked about in his D interview, though, is that dealing with carriers is a walk in the park compared to dealing with all the tiny fiefdoms that are cable companies. Even if they make a deal with Time Warner or Comcast, that's one territory in one country, and it is not the kind of global solution that Apple is looking to roll out. Even with the iPhone, they launched with AT&T, sure, but they also had deals in England and in France and in Germany. And it's hard to see how any solution they come up with that's just sort of a cable pass-through would work. The Xbox One has HDMI pass-through in the U.S., but is a pretty useless box outside of there. There's very little competition outside the U.S. There's no Amazon doesn't exist in most countries. There's no Hulu in most countries. Dealing with television is a much, much harder problem than making a phone.
I just have to wonder. The rumors were that Apple had been talking to Time Warner since the middle of last year about
content providers before them.
But the rumor was, according to the Journal, the Wall Street Journal, to make a set-top box for TWC.
I think that's a very 2002 sort of play. I really don't think Apple would do it that way. I think that one of the things that Apple could really do in order to sell a lot more Apple TVs in a way that will help cable companies to try to sell more Apple TVs for them is to do something as simple as create a very, very simple authentication system for all of these individual channel apps. When you use HBO Go, when you use the Lifetime app, when you use the Turner Classic Movies app, at some point you have to go through a step in which you authenticate that you are a Verizon customer. It will send you to a Verizon website. You have to match a code there. If Apple just simply said that, look, we are going to basically have an authentication key that identifies the owner of this box, this Apple TV box, as someone who is a subscriber of Verizon Fios or Comcast with this cable package, and therefore, as soon as they download the TCM app, they get TCM on that device. It's the only way that Apple can do that, that I think that they would present a really appealing idea to these cable companies, because they don't necessarily they would love it if you were to rent $115 a month cable boxes. But what they really want to do is to make sure that you will have a cable subscription, maybe even a premium package, and you won't cancel it. So if they simply create a system so that it's very, very easy for them to create all the services that cable cutters currently want, without the need to find all of these shows available someplace in the nether realms, I think that they would really go for that. I think they'd have to do a very simple and efficient thing, as opposed to the big idea of creating a new hardware platform just for regional cable companies. Like Renee said, they can't really do Apple. Every time that there's an idea for an Apple product that would limit them to just this territory of the world, that doesn't become a non-starter. But that means that's a rumor that I would then immediately downgrade as, yeah, good idea. Yeah, maybe even it's a product that Apple could do and do well. Maybe it's even in their wheelhouse. But are they really interested in that in this point of selling only to one or two countries? I don't think so.
Oh, all right. So it was a bogus rumor then.
Well, I mean, I think Andy's exactly right that when Apple dealt with the carriers, their pitch was ARPU will increase the average revenue per user by making data much more accessible and much more that people will want to use data more. And that's what happened. People buy iPhones. They use so many apps. They use so many web browsing that the average revenue really went up for carriers. And they'll have to find some way to work with cable companies to say, look, we'll help your bottom line, but you've got to give us this amount of freedom in these services.
And I have to think the Journal has pretty good resources at Apple, because they always seem to know what's going on. Here's what they wrote one day before the news that Comcast was buying Time Warner Cable. Apple's approach is far less ambitious. Instead of asking for full current seasons of shows, it's asking programmers for just the most recent 5 episodes of current season shows. It's kind of like Hulu. Mm-hmm. Apple's also proposing to disable fast-forwarding on shows for 3 days after they air. It's unclear whether Apple would sell the box directly to customers as it does with the Apple TV, or reach a deal with a cable operator to distribute the box and lease it to customers. One of the people said cable operators are interested in saving money by not having to invest in buying set-top boxes if Apple were to sell the boxes directly to consumers. I have to think this is all dead now.
Yeah, I just find it hard to believe.
Well, Comcast has their own box, right?
Yeah.
The Comcast box I have comes from Motorola.
Don't they have their new Xfinity, or they have some new
box? Oh, they do have a new box. Yeah. No, you're right. I don't have it yet. The X10 or something. Yeah. Right. Well, you're more up on this U.S. cable stuff than I am.
It drives me so crazily.
You have to study it, right?
Well, no, but I mean, like, they have the cable companies make apps now that you have to have the service. Like, all the Canadian television channel apps for iPad got updated. They used to be great. You would open them, you'd press an episode, you'd watch, and they'd have the last 4 or 5 episodes. Now you open it, it says you have to subscribe to one of these cable services, none of which exist in the province that I live in, so I can't get it. You open it, it says this is a forced upgrade. You have to go to the App Store and upgrade. There's no upgrade available in the App Store. Their attempt to control this is like that Star Wars line where, you know, you're squeezing your fist tighter and tighter, and more people are leaking out from between your grasp. They're just incredibly consumer hostile, and I have to think that Apple's approach, at least I hope Apple's approach, is not to compromise away a consumer friendly solution to this.
Yeah, their big trouble is that the people who are most tech savvy enough, or tech savvy enough to want to cut cable and to want to watch TV in a totally different way, are also the people who know exactly how to get Game of Thrones illegally and how to, the tools that will make it really trivially easy. And so I'm sure that, you know, there's a certain amount of Apple campus web traffic that is internet traffic that is devoted to illegally receiving TV programming, just so that the team building this know how easy it is, so they can build an Apple TV solution that is legal and at least as easy and at least as attractive. That's the big challenge.
And one of the things I think, I agree. I think that one of the things that that was successful about iTunes is it made it easy to very, very easy to buy songs inexpensively and get them down to a point where I was like, oh, I don't know if I really want to bother with you know, doing it illegally. And I think that they definitely have to find a way to get video content that way, because I think that right now it's still easier in many ways to pirate it than to go through the process. I mean, I do the same thing. I want to watch something on HBO Go, and then it asks me for my Comcast login. I don't know what my Comcast login is. I don't go to their website. You know, and every time I go,
what's really annoying is you do it once. You go look it up, you find it, you look it up, yeah. And then 2 weeks later, for some reason, it says you have to do it again. Yeah.
No, you update your Apple TV, and that's the one thing that they have not figured out. I do not know why this is so difficult for Apple, but they've not figured out how to update an Apple TV without losing all of my logins.
This drives me crazy.
You know, like every time it always says, "Would you like to update now?" And I'm like, no, because I actually want to watch a movie in the next half hour. You know,
I don't have time. I don't have time.
The CTV app updated to remove AirPlay and put a giant pause icon up on the screen if you try to AirPlay it now, too, which is wonderful.
Yeah, I've not used my Apple TV more in the past 6 months than I have forever, because I've got the Plex Connect on it now. So I can use my Apple TV to access, you know, my own personal sort of ripped DVDs and stuff all off my own media server in the house. And it's a dream. It's really, really, really nice. If only they would open the SDK. I mean, we've got WWDC coming up in June.
Right.
So, you know, and each year, probably for the past 2 years, everyone has said, Apple TV SDK, is it the time? Is it the time? Hopefully this year might be the time.
And one of the things that I think that I when we talk about live streaming, for instance, I mean, an easy way for Apple to start figuring that stuff out and making sure that it worked would actually be to let people like us stream to the Apple TV. Like, basically, I mean, right now, if you have a Pulse and you have a connection to YouTube, you can now stream live to YouTube. And, you know, I think that Apple making it available, again, the way that podcasters were there before video, it could be a great way for them to test that process. And if they opened up that infrastructure a little bit. And also, I mean, I just think games on the Apple TV, you know, in all kinds of apps and everything else that we want to use, would be just an incredible opportunity. And I think a lot of us wouldn't care about anything else they added if they just opened up the SDK, as Don was talking about.
Would it make it, that would make it like an iPhone where you could buy apps and stuff, or?
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to have different versions. I mean, that's the big question, is what would the control be? How would the SDK work? Would you have to have fatter binaries so that you don't buy the same game twice? You just have a 10-foot interface built. I mean, there's a lot of, they made for iPhone controllers are $100. You can't expect people to buy iOS devices just to use their television. How many games could play off a normal controller? Yeah, if you have an iPhone.
With your iPhone. Yeah, if you have an iPhone. How many people have an Apple TV that don't have an iPhone? I mean, I think it's probably, I think the cross section is like, there's like 10%.
Yeah, but I don't know. It seems like an unambitious crutch solution. I mean, because I mean, Google has embraced that exact same solution, but that was in service of creating a TV device that can be sold for $30-$35. And as a user of three different devices plugged into three different HDMI ports, I've got the Roku 3, I've got the Apple TV, I've got the Chromecast. I love using the Roku because most of its features can be operated through a remote control. When I want to pause something or skip back to hear something again, I don't have to fumble to pick up my phone. I don't have to carefully tap because I've got a sheet of undifferentiated glass buttons. I can have this thing in my hand and simply tap when I want to go to. That's the experience that every person with $99 to spend on a TV box has grown up having, and I think that's the experience that most people are going to want.
I might be a little different, because I feel like if the Chromecast API is opened, as apparently they have released the SDK now, and every app on my phone supports Chromecast, I think that is the experience that I'm going to go for.
And I think there's a lot of us, though. I mean, I think that, again, I think it's...
But it has to do that. Until it does that, it's not compelling. But imagine there's a Chromecast button on everything you do on your iPhone, and you just send it to your big screen TV. Isn't that compelling? I tried House of Cards on my Xbox One and on my Roku, and the quality was really poor, and it didn't seem to be getting better. That's because I'm on Comcast. Thank you very much. Then I tried it on my Chromecast, and while it started poor, it immediately got much, much better.
You have an AirPlay button on your iPhone already.
Yeah, I'm using Android. Well, for one thing, I'm using Android, so I care. I mean, it would be cross-platform, which I think is also very important. I feel like the real threat to Apple TV today is Chromecast, if it lives up to its potential, which it doesn't yet. Not the Roku.
But I just think there's a very, very... I mean, like when I look at all the things that we could do with an Apple TV as a cheap computer, I mean, because that's really what it is. It's a very, very inexpensive computer. Again, when I think about education in, you know, I don't necessarily want to provide a whole bunch of iPads, for instance, in a small school in Rwanda. I would love to be able to put those educational applications onto a, you know, onto little pucks and, you know, distribute those things and have just screens. And I mean, it literally could be screens and mice as far as
I'm concerned. Apple-centric for me. I think the modern world is moving away from that. And I know Apple likes its ecosystem, but to me, that's what's going to kill the iWatch, the Apple TV, and everything else. It's just too Apple-centric.
Well, it's two different kinds of customers. Like, there'll be customers for whom the ease of use overcomes the lack of cross-compatibility, and there'll be people for whom the cross-compatibility kills whatever they would get out of the ease of use.
Yeah.
And I think the people who are looking for ease of use is a much larger audience than maybe the people who are looking for cross-compatibility.
You know, we're at that. I think we're at that moment in time where things might be shifting. Well, maybe we should see.
I just hope that Apple doesn't lose its sense of ambition. That if their go-to solution to every interface problem is, oh, we'll just have them control it through the iPhone, then that means that they're not working on ways to master that really wonderful 10-foot, 5-button interface that. They're one of the few companies that could really crack this thing. Yeah. So I do think that if Apple simply said, oh, well, it's easy, you just control everything through your phone, we don't have to have an interface on this TV device, I think that would be sort of a wimp out.
We are going to take a break. Come back with your picks of the week, my friends. Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks Cloud Accounting. If you are still using Microsoft Word or Excel to create your invoices, if you still have a shoebox of receipts keeping track of expenses, it's time to save time and get paid faster with FreshBooks, the easiest way to send invoices, manage expenses, track your time and hours. FreshBooks, it's a simple cloud accounting solution that's helping thousands of new entrepreneurs and small business owners just like you save time, billing, get paid faster. There are 5 million people who have used FreshBooks, including me. I started using FreshBooks 10 years ago. I mean, it's come a long way since then, but Amber MacArthur told me about it when I was working up in Canada and I had to bill Rogers every month in Canadian dollars. It was just the worst. FreshBooks solved it for me. Go to GetFreshBooks.com right now and try it free for 60 days. No credit card required. Cancel at any time. Sign up is quick and painless. You'll invoice like a pro. You could track invoice views so you know if the client has looked at the invoice. I love that. We didn't get your invoice. Well, wait a minute. Yes, you did. I love that. Easily track expenses. And, of course, when tax time comes, your accountant will love you. Try it free. Get FreshBooks.com. Just mention Mac Break Weekly when you sign up. They got that great FreshBooks app, all of that stuff. It's so good. Works on the iPad. I didn't see. That's new. See, these guys are great. Get FreshBooks.com. Time for our picks of the week. Let's start this off with Andy Anatko.
This is a really cool web app that I read about just the other day, and unfortunately, it's really, really good. It's called, if you go to HemingwayApp.com, this is a style checker. It's an online app. You paste, it uses the rules that the creators of this app feel that Ernest Hemingway would have believed in. You paste in any text here, and in about half a second, it will highlight anything that it considers to be not necessarily a problem, but at least worth looking at. And so this is what I stress is the first draft of a column that's going to be published tomorrow or Thursday. And so it has four or five different areas of attention. Right here, it's already saying that, okay, this is readable on a grade 9 level, which it says is good. But every time it sees a problem, like, it hates adverbs, and it'll highlight every single adverb it finds and suggest that, geez, you've got 15 adverbs in this 1,600-word column. Aim for 4 or fewer. Yeah, right. Any sentence that it marks in yellow, it says that that's kind of hard to read. You might want to change that around. So, for instance, and it's interactive, too. So, for instance, I've got an ellipsis breaking up, tying two parts of a sentence together. So, if I want to, and change that to that, it suddenly has no problem with that sentence. One sentence here, it says that is just impossible, really hard to read. Definitely take a look at that. This is a use of passive voice. I like it because I will say that it's important that if you're a writer to use a tool like this only after you've developed a certain amount of confidence in what you're doing. Because it's very, very easy if you don't think that you're a good writer to say, oh, okay, I'm going to make sure that I never, ever use any adverbs here. I'm going to make sure that this sentence that it says is too long. I'm going to make sure I'm definitely going to cut that up. When in fact, you know, I don't care how many times you're going to quote Stephen King at me, adverbs are actually good and they're useful. There's a reason why we have them in the language. We have them so that we can use them, much like a gun.
But the example they give is very good. Adverbs are helpfully shown in blue. You could really cut that helpfully out.
Exactly. So, I mean, I was the first time I used it, because I've seen a lot of these kind of tools that usually are less of a scientific writing tool and more of a, I think that anybody who has a style different from mine is a jerk, and I'm going to have a write a piece of software that tells you you're a jerk if you write differently than from how I like things to be written. This is more like, we've marked a few things up. Take a look at it. Change it if you want. If you don't want to change it, that's fine. And the first time I've seen a lot of these. A lot of these aren't very good. This one, as soon as I tried it, like I also tried it with, again, a first draft thing. And I'll be darned, it really did flag most of the things that I would have flagged myself when I go through my second draft pass.
This is so much better than the crap grammar detectors in Microsoft Word and stuff like this. This is really good.
And so this is web only. It's web only for now. If you click the desktop version, it will say, "Would you pay $5 for a desktop version of this?" Not saying that we actually have one for sale, but they're trying to gauge interest. Yeah. I don't want them to do a desktop version of this. What I would really like them to do is to have them license this for other as a plugin for or built-in tool. If Scrivener had this, I would use it all the time.
Yeah.
Again, not as I write, and I stress that you should not. It is possible to actually write inside this window. It actually is composed to begin with. Absolutely do not do that. I'm saying that once you finish your first draft, paste it in here and see what it has to say. Do not accept everything it tells you as gospel truth, but it makes it very, very hard. It makes it very, very easy to quickly see, here's a very long sentence. Here's a lot, very long sentence. Here's every time I use an adverb, it's blue. And if I see a run that has like 18 blue words in it, I'm going to say, yeah, as much as I like adverbs, perhaps I've just worn out the lettering on the letter L-Y on my keyboard on that paragraph and I should change it. So
I really think this would be a... my daughter's writing college essays right now. And, I mean, she's already been to college, but she's transferring. And I actually gave her some of this advice as she read it to me yesterday. And I said, well, there's some adverbs there. You could have, that sentence is complicated. You could use a shorter word here. I just sent her a link. This is great.
Yeah.
This is because she's not going to listen to me, but this is great.
I will repeat it again, though. Don't let your own writing style be defined by an algorithm.
Yeah.
Just, again, this is all it is doing is it is highlighting certain text for you to take a look at. If you read it again, because my problem is that sometimes I put so much work into getting to the end of this piece and getting all my facts straight and getting all my ideas in there that sometimes it's like, oh, man, this really needs to be in the next 20 minutes. I really want to send it right now as opposed to I need to reread this and give it a careful edit. It's so easy to scroll through. And
I told her every word with an L-Y, just look at it and see if you really need it.
Well, for me, it's like anytime it really is glaring when you see, wow, that really is a big block of red. That is, and that's really one sentence you say? Okay, perhaps I will take another look at
it. If you see a red highlight, your sentence is so dense and complicated that your readers will get lost trying to find its meandering, splitting logic.
Only really smart people will be able to read this. So don't write that.
Didn't James Joyce write a chapter length sentence, though? See, and he was James Joyce. So there you go. There you go. Thank you, Andy. That's Hemingway at HemingwayApp.com. Don McAllister, your pick of the week.
Right. Well, hopefully this hasn't been chosen before because it's actually something I bought about 18 months ago. At least I think I paid for it then, but it's only just arrived today or, well, the past few days. It's one of these. The Galileo by Motor. Yeah.
What is it?
It's a Kickstarter project. Oh, it's a little robotic stand. It's got a tripod mount at the bottom. Basically, you slot your iPhone into it. And let's see if this works. It's okay. We'll start. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. It's going to. Yeah, there we go. Going to start spinning and taking pictures.
Is it like a gigapan? Does it stitch them?
It does a full 360 panoramic photograph.
Oh, neat.
And there's about a dozen applications that support it. So there's its own application. There's one that I've been using called Sphere, which then enables you to, once you've got the picture, it stitches it all together and you can see it on your iPhone and you can move it around And it gives you a full 360 up and down panoramic shot. So it's really good.
This
really
is from Motor, MOTRR.com.
Yeah, this is the Bluetooth one. Because when I ordered it, it was before the iPhone 5 was out. Or, in fact, it was before the Lightning connector was out.
Wow.
Yep. So the original one had a 30-pin connector.
Oh.
And I ordered the 30-pin connector. But then when the Lightning connector came out, they came out with a Bluetooth version. Right, so that's finished now. So it's now enhancing it, and eventually it will... It will actually... Of course, you need to put it on a steady surface, by the way. You don't hold it like this, because it will probably work.
So. Special deal on the 30-pin versions. They're $20 cheaper, $130. Yeah. And they have them now at motor.com, $150 for the
they do a Lightning white, version. A white case and a black case. So they do the Bluetooth, and they do the 30-pin version. But I was really impressed with the build quality. The build quality is really, really nice. And I've only played with it a couple of times, but it works fantastically well.
Awesome. MOTRR.com. Chad, instead of the Kickstarter, why don't you show this page? Because it is now a real product. It's done.
It's finished the image, but it's all over the place because I've been moving. So it's worth showing.
The GigaPan is such a cool product. And for this price, that's great. I bet those images. Have you posted any of those images?
I haven't, but if you go to the Sphere website, I think, because the Sphere is both an app and a
software.
Web service.
There's
some stuff on there that you can have a look at.
Cool. Don McAllister, Screencasts Online, everybody. You must subscribe. There's great content there always for free. Do you have a code for us this week?
I haven't actually, but I've opened it up, so there's a 14-day free trial for everybody. So you can go along, sign up, and have a look at all the stuff.
See, you should have just said it's for Mac Break Weekly viewers and anybody they tell.
I'll tell you what, next time I'm on, special code. All right.
No. That's great. Screencasts Online, 2 weeks free right now to try it out. That's great. Thank you, Don. Alex Lindsay's in D.C. He may be in front of the White House, but do not shoot him. He is no threat.
Well, I think I have one that is very, now that I'm in D.C., very, very pertinent to D.C., and that is secret. So I don't think
I can't stop playing with this damn thing.
It is so addicting.
Yeah.
Now, I have to admit, I haven't really posted anything on there because I personally have this belief that I shouldn't put anything on the internet.
Yeah.
That I don't wish to be public.
I dread the day that 2 weeks from now there's a secret hack and everybody knows what you posted.
And so I haven't posted anything. And even if I did, it probably would not be it'd be something that I'd almost be willing to put on Twitter anyway. You know, it's like that because that's all I ever post. But I have to admit, it's a lot of fun to watch. So it's as a spectator sport, secret.ly, I think, but it's that you can see it. But it's what it basically does is it looks at your circles, your contacts, and if other people are using secret on your contacts, they can put up secrets anonymously, and you can comment on them anonymously. And some of them are, you know, just basic stuff, you know, whatever. But a lot of it can be fairly scandalous. And
seem to be like things like, I'm pooping while I'm reading this. A very popular secret. Exactly. I don't think you need to share that anymore. Thank you.
I don't have a lot of people in my secret circle that have been talking about pooping, but there are ones that, you know, and some of them, I think that every once in a while you end up with these secrets that are truly very personal, you know, and I don't know whether they're, you know, and I mean, sometimes they're. Oh, someone just watched the Lego Movie, obviously.
See, the key on this is that unlike, there's been other apps like that, like Whisper, but the key on this one is that you know whether it's somebody you know or not because you give them your contact list.
Right.
And then so
they're circled, they're a friend or they're a friend of a friend.
Right.
Or
and then if there are enough likes on something, it actually can go, national. So then you'll see a state or a country. But like this is somebody who's a friend of somebody in my contact list. If I see just friend, then I know it's and that's what's tantalizing about this, because if you see just friend, you know that somebody, you know, posted that.
And man, there have been some that they said, I was like, holy smokes, I can't believe that's someone in my circles.
Mostly, mostly it's jokes though, right?
Yeah, mostly jokes. Most of it's maybe 10% of them that are really outlandish.
So here's a friend wrote, I really like her, but I don't know if she likes me. Oh boy. Wow, that's really revealing. But you know what? You cannot stop.
You can't
reading.
There is something that feels very personal about it, and And so anyway, it's I don't know how long I'll think that that's cool or whatever, but it's definitely worth it as a social experiment. It's definitely worth checking out.
It just brings you back to those wonderful days of high school.
Yes, exactly. It does feel like high school all over again.
What do you imagine the revenue model is of an app that encourages you to tell its secrets?
Yeah, I don't think there is a revenue model.
From a device that could be personally identified to you. You're going to get like a text message later on saying, yeah, we figured out who it is that you like, that she doesn't like you back. If you don't want us to tell her that you
her,
$80.
No, I hope it's not that. It's a couple of guys from Google, three guys, I think, from Google. And they really know iOS design. Here's one. I never eject disk. That's somebody I know. And the other thing, there's hearts and comments, which makes it kind of fun, too. You can read what other people say about it.
Well, and when you're seeing, like, friend of a friend, I believe that's only people – you've had a friend who hearted it. You know, like, it's not – it doesn't automatically. So someone has to heart it for you to see that.
And then you can tell because the person – so you don't get – when you comment, you're still anonymous, but you get an avatar – the crown is the avatar of the person who made the comment. But then people sometimes talk back to the avatars. So, so people, there'll be conversations going on among the avatars in which they refer to each other as each other's avatar, which is getting – you know what? Don't download it, whatever you do.
It's just so addicting. I'm terrible. Sorry I even brought it up.
Unfortunately, it's only available in the U.S. as well. So.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, I forgot the top story of the week. Apple has banned all Flappy Bird clones from the App Store.
Just the name, unfortunately.
Oh, just the name?
You can clone the game, but you can't use Flappy in the title.
That's stupid. Stupid. Murnay Ritchie from iMore.com, your pick of the week.
It did let me download it in Canada, so it's at least a cross-border secret. It just doesn't, my pick is there's this wonderful app development company called Panic, which I'm sure almost everybody is familiar with. They make a fantastic web development program called Coda, and they also make one for the iPad called Diet Coda. And Diet Coda just went to version 1.5. Now, it's an iPad app, which means you can't do all – a lot of people are just so used to typing onto a Mac and doing all sorts of crazy ninja-like things with a development environment. This is not that. This is if you're on your iPad and you need to make a few changes in your website, update some of the code, maybe change the CSS a little bit. It does a lot of the things that Coda – that the full-blown Coda does. It just does them in a full-screen app that's a little more focused. The new additions are local files and Dropbox integration – which is fantastic. And of course, they go to the trouble of making an HTML5 version of the app you can play with on the website to make sure you actually like it before you go buy it, because I think it's $15 or $19. So it's not your average $1 IAP app. $20, there you go. But I've used it when I've been out on the road and I've needed to make some urgent changes to a website that I screwed up before I went out on the road and only found out a bit in transit. It works great. The syntax highlighting is fantastic. It's got the interface that you'd expect from Panic. And that all of this works on an iPad so beautifully, it gives me a lot of faith for the mobile future.
Yeah. I got to say that any Panic app is almost worth buying just to experience the user interface. It is just so beautiful and so focused on task.
I've used their Coda for years. Really like it. Really, really.
Cable Sasser, Stephen Frank, Nevin Morgan, fantastic group.
And you got to love the name of Diet Coda.
It's just perfect.
You get points for that, too. Thank you, Renee. iMore.com, Crackberry.com, all the other .coms. He owns them all. He is the king of .coms. Nice to have you once again, Renee. We appreciate it. Stay warm. Survive the winter. Spring is just months away. Despite what they say on Game of Thrones.
We have nine months of winter and then a couple months of summer. I've never heard of the spring.
There's no such thing as spring in Montreal.
There's thaw and then there's freeze.
Alex Lindsay, how long are you going to be out there?
I am in D.C. today, New York tomorrow, London over the weekend, and L.A. on Monday, but I'll be back by Tuesday for Mac Break.
Okay, I'll bring the Mac Pro in then for you. And I really am serious. If they ever release a new Mac Mini, I want to do that A/B test. You could be the guy flipping the switch.
Yes,
behind the scenes. I really like that idea. Screencast Online, that's the home for Don McAllister. Always a pleasure, Don. Still tickets available for Mac Mania 17. Visit geekcruises.com. And you can join Don, his lovely wife Barbara, and many other experts as they travel around the British Isles.
Should be good fun.
A little France thrown in for spice. Alex, I'm sorry, Andy, and I keep calling you Alex. Andy Iannocco is at the Chicago Sun-Times, where he is constantly creating wonderful prose that fits Hemingway's style almost perfectly, except for this occasional stray adverb. Thank you for being here.
I'm like Hemingway, only without the reputation or the guns.
Thank you all. We do Mac Break. Oh, by the way, my pick of the week is going to be reviewed in just a few minutes on Security Now. It's the Ryan Seacrest keyboard for the iPhone 5, the typo keyboard. Steve Gibson has one. I just got mine. And we'll take a look at that and then have a full review on Before You Buy from Mr. Stephen Tiberius Gibson. That's coming up in just a bit on Security Now. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday morning, 11 a.m. Pacific. Actually, that'd be the afternoon for you guys on the East Coast, 2 p.m. Eastern time. And in the evening, if you're in Britain, it's, 1900 UTC on twit.tv. Please watch live. We love it if you do. If you don't, well, don't worry. We burn a copy to CD and ship it to Apple headquarters every single day. And you can get audio or even video today available from iTunes and wherever else netcasts are stored. We send out a lot of CDs every day. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Now get back to work, because you know what? Break time is over.